stop reading the keystrokes, the old one. Well, the way they work, my brother got really sick, hospitalized last week. I ended up going down to Lancaster on Wednesday. I went down Wednesday, Thursday, and then I went back yesterday. So I couldn't have made it anyway, but.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, June the 8th. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Reynolds.
Here.
Councilmember Dickens.
Here.
Councilmember Costello.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Lubin is absent tonight, and Mayor Ferrara.
Here. The council just adjourned from closed session, and we were discussing a labor issue, and we have nothing to report at this time. That takes us to item number three, which is our flag salute. And this evening, Mr. Charles Howell is here from VFW Post 2829 to lead us in the flag salute. And at the completion of the flag salute, if you would remain standing for our invocation, and Pastor Richard Sharn is here from New Life Community Church.
Thank you for inviting us here. And salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I'd like to also introduce our auxiliary president,
Amy
Clay.
Welcome.
Okay, we'll have our our invocation now.
Our Heavenly Father, we come to you this evening with praise and adoration and thanksgiving for your constant faithfulness to each of us as we look to you for guidance and wisdom. In a nation where we enjoy peace and many blessings, we hear daily of those who are struggling for peace and liberty and justice. It is a struggle between powers that desire to kill and steal and destroy, and those who fight for freedom from oppression. Please be with every one of our men and women who are in the armed services of our country, here and around the world. Our prayer would be that you would protect them by your might, cause them to succeed as they defend the cause of righteousness. Thank you for our men and women who have sacrificed their lives and fortunes for our liberty and justice, for those who stormed the beaches of Normandy to make the world free and safe, and those serving the country now to do the same in our world. Tonight, the nation remembers with thankfulness a great president, Ronald Reagan. His love for God and country and his love and faith in our Lord Jesus Christ was an example. He is remembered with love, and we pause for just a moment to pay tribute. We each need your wisdom. This council desires your wisdom in the deliberation of this meeting. We've come to ask for this favor, that our city may be blessed and that it may move forward with right choices. We want to thank you for those who serve. Thank you for our leaders here in this council meeting and of our state and nation who are in authority. And may they be guided by the wisdom that is from above. This is our prayer. In the name of our Savior and Lord, amen.
Thank you, Pastor. And Charles, this would be an opportunity if you'd like to say a few words about VFW and activities that you've been involved in recently.
Well, we have just finished our Memorial Day services at the local cemetery. For those who came, thank you. We have about 1,700 veterans buried in Arroyo Grande, and we work with Post 136 of the American Legion and decorating those graves every year. We invite you all every year to remember and come on the last Monday of the month. Right now, that's about the extent of our acts. We don't have anything more until November scheduled, and that will be the Veterans Service.
Well, it's a noble and an honorable thing that you do every year. We very much appreciate the work that the VFW does here in five cities, and we thank you for being here this evening and leading us in the flag salute.
It's an honor.
Okay. Thank you.
I would like to remember, just in passing, Michelangelo Mora, PFC in the United States Army, who gave his life in Iraq and was buried just last week.
Yeah. And we appreciate that as well. And last week in the confusion, we were in the process of adjourning the meeting in his honor. We're going to do that this evening. So thanks for mentioning that. Okay, that takes us to item number 5, special presentations. We have a GIS presentation this evening.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Okay. Good evening. Good evening, council members. This evening, we'd like to present to the council our GIS system, our graphic information system. Several years ago, the Public Works Department was in the process of updating our Atlas information. Those are the maps that we hold all of the records for the water lines and sewer lines and storm drains. And they were paper records. And at that time, we did an analysis on a GIS system and decided to implement this particular system because of the versatility that it provides for utilization by other departments. And I'm going to turn it over to Mike and Ryan, who are going to make the presentation. Thank you.
Okay.
Good evening. I'm Mike Lynn, the Assistant City Engineer. Can you hear me all right?
Sure. Mic on, Mike.
I believe it is. I'm here to answer that question. What is a geographic information system, abbreviated GIS? GIS is a computer technology that combines geographic data and other types of information to generate visual maps and reports. The GIS system will allow the city to combine mapping, infrastructure, and applicable elements into a central system for access by all city departments. The GIS system takes a computerized base map of the city and adds layers of information onto it. The information is digitized and placed onto each specific layer with specific points of information, such as a manhole or a tree, or geographic boundaries, such as you would have around a parcel, or a line of information, such as you would have with a water line or a sewer line. You can then link the electronic database information directly to each of the specific geographic points, which describe the particular components. Let's say, for example, you target a specific area or physical object, such as a street light. The database component may describe the actual installation which was installed, the fixture type, the number of luminaires that it is able to generate, any maintenance that was ever performed on it, and you'd have that all within easy access. There's actually no limit to the amount of information that you can place on the GIS layer or the number of layers, as long as it has a geographic reference point to tie into and that you have enough computer capacity in which to store the information. Which leads us to the question, where are we now? Well, the Public Works Department has completed the foundation of the GIS system, the fundamental base layer on which we can build the remainder of the system. It consists of... It consists of a digitized computer base map of the entire city, and it integrates aerial photographs, which are scaled to correlate exactly with the physical locations of the base map. Public Works then placed the city's infrastructure information, which included water, sewer, and stormwater lines and components, the Parks and Recreation tree inventory, and the county assessor's information for land use, parcels, zoning, and other corresponding records. Again, separate layers were created for each groupings of information. Now, again, this is just a starting point, but it is a strong foundation on which we can build in the future. Our system currently is used to design infrastructure improvements, manage the infrastructure, make presentation material for City Council, Planning Commission, and Traffic Commission meetings, track vehicle accident history for the police department, perform address notifications, and to track land use designations. The GIS system was also used as the basis for the police department in creating their 911 system. So the following slides were created by Chuck Pruitt from the Public Works Department and are representative examples of what we were discussing. The first one is a vehicle accident history. This, I believe, was in the village area. And as you can see, there is a reference to a specific point of information, which is the intersection. The database insert has the fields of information which are included, which includes the date of the accident, time that it happened, and other specific data that's deemed applicable. We track this on a month-to-month basis. This particular one is a landmark city trees. We perform this for the Parks and Recreation Department. The actual tree may be a little difficult to see. Okay, thank you, Chuck. This was added as another layer after we started the system, and again, you have the database insert, which describes the information that we're looking for. Okay, the next three slides actually show our infrastructure. This is the stormwater, and yeah, it's pretty easy to see. You got the green line that shows the actual storm drain going from the back of City Hall, tying into Arroyo Grande Creek. The next one is the sanitary sewer atlas, and again, the green line designates the sanitary sewer, again, in the same region right here at Mason and Branch. And the waterline atlas, again, shown in green. If we were showing all these layers together, obviously, they would have different colors to differentiate them. And again, with the database insert so that you can see the information that's actually being tracked. And this is an example of a presentation package. This one was for the Traffic Commission for Allen Street. But again, we took a little snippet of information, which includes the aerial photograph and the base map, and we were able to add text to describe the condition or the request from the residents and how we were going to present it to the commission on that evening. Okay, and at this time, I'd like to turn over to Ryan Foster, who will describe the current descriptions of what he does in the Community Service Department.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. I just want to run through this real quick, a demonstration of what this system is capable of and what we use it on a mostly daily basis now that we have it. As we can see on the right hand of the screen, this is just the base map of this entire city parcels. You can see the creek, Highway 101 running through the middle. Then on the left side here, we have different tables, which are just databases connected to the spatial object, which in this case is the base map of the city. On the top, we have community development project information, zoning districts under that. Then we tie into the county info for assessors information and the actual physical information of the parcels, including APN number and parcel size. So at this time, I'll just show how you can run analysis on the system. Say we want to find all of the parcels in the city, let's click here, that are less than 2,500 square feet. So you just type in what your parameters are, hit new set, and it might take a second here, but it'll pull up. You can see it's starting to highlight all of those parcels that match the query information. And these are all linked together, so it's taking a little longer than if we just had the base map by itself. And we did this type of analysis when we did the zoning update for the village to figure out how many parcels we had that were legally nonconforming with the current standards. Okay, we'll get rid of that. The other thing that I wanted to demonstrate real quick is how we can use this to generate mailing labels for notifications. So if we come in here on the street names, I've already got Nelson Street highlighted. That's the yellow line there. And so if I want to generate a list, we can just come up here. We're going to select by theme. We want within a distance of Nelson Street. I think Nelson Street's about 55 feet wide, so let's just put in 50. And I think that should give us what we want. It's pulling them up. And so here we can zoom to that and see all of the affected parcels. The good thing about the system is that since everything's in a database, it can easily be exported between other systems. So what I've done for this is linked it to a template in Microsoft Word that's connected to this information for the mailing list, and we can instantly print out labels. So let's go back here. The third thing I wanted to touch on, which is on the city's intranet right now, it's not accessible to the public, it's running off of a server in Community Development Department, is a web application for GIS, which could potentially be made available for the public for simple queries. They wouldn't have access to all of the information that we have, but if they wanted to, say, turn on parcels and then check zoning, they could do this from their internet browser. This takes a second. And this is pretty basic, so I just set this up kind of in my spare time just to demonstrate what could be done for future use as we progress in our skills with the GIS. So here we have the village area. And I think if I zoom in one more time, it'll turn on the aerial. Yeah. So it turns on the aerial. If we want to get rid of the zoning districts, we can see that a little more clearly. And you can see each parcel has its address as well. So again, this is just an example of what can be done, but we think it'd be a great public tool. We get a lot of inquiries on a daily basis as to what a property is zoned, what the land use is, and even how big the parcel is. So this would just be something that we could put out there and educate the public, and then they can use it as a tool themselves. And I think that's all I have. I'll try to keep it quick here. Turn it back over to Mike. I think he's got a couple more things to say.
Well, the question comes, where do we want to go from here? That's our base information level. In the future, we could make the GIS system available to the city, much as Ryan showed us on this representative website. I would like to emphasize that the information will be only read-only, and the data can't be manipulated or changed unless you're authorized personnel. Private or sensitive information layers, such as the police would have, may be turned off or just rendered inaccessible. Next slide. Okay, potential future applications. These are just some things we thought of today while we were sitting around. We may or may not perform. But you could do demographic information, such as age, school-age children, Democrat, Republican, however you want to break it up. Economic development areas, places that could be prime properties that we'd want to spur development within the city. Environmentally sensitive areas, such as you would have with Arroyo Grande Creek, or any place where you have endangered animals, anybody on the list. Crime patterns, the police could track over time, crime, and try to find ways to attract that. And then just basic things like garbage pickup routes, bus routes, just anything we want to put on there. These, of course, these applications must be planned for and budgeted in future fiscal years. But I would like to emphasize that virtually any groupings of data that can be tied into a map can be placed on its own layer in the GIS system. Instead of having hundreds of individual maps throughout the city, you can combine them into one central location that can be accessed by everybody. And this concludes our presentation. We'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions on the GIS system for Mike or Ryan? Mike, Ryan? Okay, never mind. No? I just want to make an observation. I'm very pleased to see us get into this form of technology. I think it has, as you indicated, endless number of applications, and it looks like we've got a great start at it. So be interesting to see where imagination and innovation takes us. So good job.
Mr. Mayor, also, while they're here, I'd like to just kind of some kudos, obviously, Mike and his work on this system. Also, while Ryan is here, I wanted to recognize Ryan and Kelly for their work on the website, which he referred to a little bit, but they are really the people responsible for that. We've received a lot of compliments on the format of that website. We're real proud of that.
And you know, I wanted to mention that as well. It was during the League of Cities dinner that one of the representatives from the other cities in Channel Counties came up and said, you know, you guys have got probably one of the best websites, city websites, we've ever seen. And in fact, they were thinking of redesigning theirs so that it looked more like ours. So I forgot to mention that, but this is a good time to do it. So great. Thanks. Okay, that takes us to item number 6, agenda review. Move that all resolutions and ordinances presented tonight be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion carries. Takes us to item number 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward and comment on items that are not on this evening's agenda. We would request that you limit your comments to 3 minutes or less, and please limit your comments to the council as a whole and not individual council members. Any member of the public would like to come forward. Items not on this evening's agenda.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. My name is John Mack, representative for SNS Homes.
there's an item I brought before staff a couple months ago, and I'd like to ask cooperation with the city. It's in a coordination effort of our Jasmine Place project, and if I can borrow the overhead for just a moment, I got a couple pictures I'd like to show.
As long as it's quick.
It will be quick. I'll be on the three-minute timer.
I believe this item's going to be agendized for the next meeting.
This isn't to do with our street closure. This is a request to put our job trailer on city property. We have to build our project all out together because of our affordable units that we're providing with the project, so we're having to stage all the construction together. And we've asked the city if we can put our job trailer in front of the corporation yard and want to know if there's any legal implications to that, whether the city would allow us to do that or not. I have one more picture that I'd like to show you. Our job trailer is approximately 12 by 16 feet, and we like to locate it in the motorcycle stalls that are in front of the city corp yard. And we'd like to know if that's a possibility to help us out with our staging and our construction activities.
Well, I think this would be an opportunity for staff maybe to get together with you at some point in the near future, and maybe we can discuss that, Steve, and see what the ins and outs, and maybe get together with Don and see if that's something that can or cannot be done. And it seemed to me it's close to sort of sports complex, so maybe the other end of your trailer could open up and sell hot dogs and stuff to the sports teams, and who knows. Okay.
I will call John tomorrow and say,
okay, put you guys together and see if we can't get something worked out.
Coffee on Harvest Bag Day.
That's right. Anyone else? Public comment.
Well, thanks for mentioning Harvest Bag, because it segues well into what I want to talk about. Thank you. I'm just going to take a quick minute. My name is Michael Passarelli. I'd like to speak. I live in Grover Beach. I'd like to speak in my capacity as president of the board of directors of the San Luis Obispo County Food Bank Coalition to remind everyone that June is Hunger Awareness Month, and with that, we are looking to solve hunger on the Central Coast, and that is a doable situation. Through its 150 agencies, both the Oceano and Paso Robles warehouses are pumping out 6 to 8 million pounds of food in the next couple of years, but our food net requires 20 million pounds. So here's what we're asking. If every person in San Luis Obispo County skipped just one meal this year, donated the cost to the Food Bank Coalition, hunger could be effectively handled. It's that simple. And we can you can get to the website, slofoodbank.org. And, Tony, thank you for letting us, during any breaks, put that website up for people. But it is that simple. We could become only the second county in California to truly handle hunger. We're that close. So with the help of everyone, we can make this happen.
Thanks. Okay. Great. Thank you. And, feel free to put that overhead up and run it during a break. And we'll at least cover our TV audience. So. Yes, sir.
Mr. Mayor, I'm Gary Hoffman. I live at Berry Gardens. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to ask when you're going to floor or bring up again closing the Cortland.
I believe that's on the agenda, and we're going to that's going to be discussed.
Tonight?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So stick around, and when we call that item, then feel free.
Okay.
Very good. Any other public comments? Items not on this evening's agenda. Okay, we'll close public comment. That will take us to item number 8, consent agenda. This is a block of items that the council normally approves in one action. Unless there is an item on consent that any council member would like to pull for further discussion, are there any items this evening?
I have none, Mr. Mayor. I have a comment on one of them, though, please.
Okay.
When you look at item F, which is going to be the rebroadcast of the Arroyo Creek Watershed Forum, I think this is going to be a good opportunity for the general public to get a look at what the district is facing as far as the regulatory things that they have to go through to get anything done in the creek. So I think it's going to be well worth the time to broadcast it.
Okay. Thanks. Any other comments or questions, desires to pull items on consent? Seeing none,
I will move that we accept the consent agenda that's presented.
Okay. We have a motion to approve items 8A through 8F on consent. Is there a second?
Second.
And any discussion? I don't see any items in there to be read, Tim, this evening. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Not hearing any discussion. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Reynolds?
Yes.
Council Board Member Dickens?
Yes.
Council Board Member Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Takes us to item number 9, public hearings. We have none this evening. We'll take us to item number 10, continued business. 10A, consideration of initiating a general plan amendment for a property located on Noyes Road, plan development 1.2, City of Arroyo Grande.
Mayor, members of the council, this is a discussion item that was initiated by a request from Mayor Ferrara, the consent of the city council, and scheduled at the last meeting for discussion, but precluded by virtue of the time constraint. It is rescheduled for this evening. It involves a 53-acre, two-parcel portion of Rancho Grande plan development PD 1.2, currently designated on the general plan conservation open space with an internal envelope of low density residential plan development. This designation was discussed and determined as a part of the 2001 general plan. The attachment to your staff report is an excerpt from the program EIR, which was a part of the general plan program, and a range of alternatives were considered. A recommendation was received from the Planning Commission. The recommendation was modified by the City Council and the current designation established at that time. Again, this is a discussion item. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Are there questions? If not, I'll add some background information to this as well. Yes.
What was the previous designation prior to the general plan update on this particular parcel was?
The 1990 general plan showed the PD designation, plan development, PD 1.2. There was not a separate classification indicating what the actual land use was in PD 1.2. So PD 1.2 was both a general plan designation and a zoning designation. The zoning designation remains PD 1.2, which provided for the residential subdivisions and open space that are a part of Rancho Grande overall development.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Councilmember Reynolds.
Rob, has the owner of this parcel come forward with any plan at this point in time?
Castle Rock, the owner of the Rancho Grande PD, has been notified of this particular meeting, the prior meeting. They have submitted a pre-application, which is scheduled for June 17th, discussion at the Staff Advisory Committee. That's not necessarily relevant to tonight's discussion.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions for Rob?
Yeah, one more clarification, if you don't mind, Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
Rob, in the attachment one, as you identified that the 1990 designation, general plan designation for this particular parcel was PD 1-2, and then it goes on to say that, and it's shown on the Rancho Grande conceptual master plan as two parcels that are part of an unplanned PD areas, unplanned plan development area. That's confusing to me.
It is confusing. The unplanned portions, that is, those areas which weren't specifically subdivided as a part of the original plan development submittal, were allowed additional consideration for development. The PD 1.2 actually allocated two units, one for each of the two parcels that the property is currently composed of. There's about a 25-acre and a 27-acre parcel, which you can see underlying the land use map. So under current zoning, the property would be restricted to one residence on each parcel. Under the current general plan, it would be considered possible to submit a plan development composed of approximately 35 residential units based upon the land use designations.
So through our last go-around with the general plan update, we've actually increased the potential density designation on this particular parcel. Is that correct?
That is correct, from 2 to up to 35.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? I just want to add some comments to this that kind of lends to the rationale for bringing this up. I think the request is, you know, fairly simple this evening. What I'm asking council to consider and approve would be to allow staff to initiate the general plan amendment process that would reduce the density from low to very low, which would allow for a maximum of up to 21 homes. This process, I believe, would allow the Planning Commission to hold public hearings. As Rob indicated, the density on this property was increased by the council. I believe the very low density designation was the recommendation that came from the Planning Commission to us during the general plan process, was it not, Rob?
The Planning Commission, by a 3-2 vote, recommended conservation open space with a 10-acre minimum, which would have enabled five units.
Five or ten?
That was really a range of possibilities. The recommendation was for conservation open space, and okay, we discussed either five or ten.
So we went from conservation over open space, five or ten, up to a maximum of 35. So what I would like to do is initiate a process that would allow the Planning Commission to hold public hearings and study this issue and perhaps make some new recommendations. The basis for this, at least in my opinion, is that this particular site is both visually and environmentally sensitive. It is on our fringe and not in our core, as the map indicates. And I believe that if we continue to honor and abide by smart growth principles, there seems to be a conflict here in terms of approach. There may well be, not certain yet, but there may well be some planning deficiencies that we need to revisit with regard to traffic and infrastructure, and I think this process would give us a chance to consider cumulative traffic impacts that have occurred over the past 3 years. And I believe that again, given the situation presently here in the city with traffic circulation and infrastructure issues, that it's a responsible thing to do. So I'm asking council for support to initiate this process and at least get it back through the Planning Commission and the public hearing process. So that's pretty much my position here. Anyone else have any comments?
Mr. Mayor, I'll go ahead and comment on this. I know that when this came before us as one of the areas of review for the general plan update, I had some concerns in regards to the ultimate designation of this parcel. And my comment, if I believe correctly back then, was that there were a lot of unknowns in regards to the environmental impacts in Meadow Creek, as you mentioned just now, the traffic circulation and cumulative impacts. And my philosophy has always been that there are certainly possibilities for development on this particular parcel, but it was up to the applicant to bring something forth and then through the environmental review process determine whether the density that was being proposed could actually be accommodated with the environmental concerns. And I thought that we were putting the cart before the horse in order to designate it at that particular time as low-density residential, almost in a sense giving it some credence as to what the potential development was, even though we didn't really know at the time. So I would concur with your concerns on this particular parcel, and again, not knowing what this development potential would be, but having the Planning Commission go back and review this particular piece, and then you know, evaluate it based on some additional new information, I think would be helpful. So I would support your request.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Ms. Barrett, I have a question too for staff. If we take any kind of action on this, or if we have Planning Commission do public review on this, and hypothetically it goes to the very low density, or God forbid, even goes back to conservation open space the way Planning Commission recommended 2 years ago, what effects would that have on the applicant's options and processes? Does it matter whether it's low density, very low density, conservation open space? The applicant is going to come forward at some point with a proposal for this property, and he's going to ask the city to allow him to change it to meet what he applies for. Is that correct?
Presumably, the applicant intends to come forward with a proposal consistent with the adopted general plan and to request consistent zoning. If the council initiates reconsideration of the general plan, the notice will start a process which would then conclude an appropriate general plan designation, and with the initiation of that process, the applicant will be advised that the outcome of that discussion, whether it's to leave it as is or to change it, would be affecting the property and the development proposal.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Mayor, as one of the three people that was that voted to have it as conservation open space on the Planning Commission, I think it'd be very prudent for us to take a good look at the cumulative impacts on this piece of property and to examine what it should be. If that means that it comes back as very low density, or if it remains low density, I can live with that. But I think that we should take a look at this piece of property in light of the environment, the setting, and all the impacts that are out there right now, and establish what our baseline is going to be. So I can support this.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. You know, I think that when we go through the general plan process like we spent a long time doing here several years ago, and then we're going to change it after we went through this low-density situation already, I think that probably the applicant is getting shortchanged to a certain degree, because he was working with a plan that was put forward through all the public hearings and so forth, and now we want to change it and perhaps take things away, and I don't know whether that's exactly legal or right to reduce the density down to where you're going to have one or two houses on that big a parcel. And, you know, we talk about wanting to have affordable housing and save the real estate and whatnot. Well, to me, that's wasting an awful lot of land putting one house on it. So I can't support it.
Okay. Thank you. While this is not a public hearing, we do allow an opportunity for public input on agenda items such as these. If there's any member of the audience would like to come forward and comment, this would be an opportunity to do so. Okay, seeing none, we will close public comment. And if there's a member of council would like to make a motion, so be it. If not, I will. Okay, I will make a motion to direct staff to initiate public hearings to consider a general plan amendment for an approximately 53-acre property located on the southeast side of Noyes Road at the northwest edge of the city limits, which is currently designated low-density residential and conservation open space plan development.
Second.
did the motion include the designation that you are seeking to at least initiate the amendment to change it to, which I believe is very low density?
Very low. Does it have to be one?
For purposes of the notice, yes, it would have to be a specific redesignation.
Well, then I think the very low density would be for purposes of the notice.
And is that included in the motion? So the change would be from low density to very low density, conservation open space with a PD?
Right.
Thank you. Sorry.
Okay. That's the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Reynolds?
No.
And Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Thank you. That takes us to 10B, consideration of implementation plan for code enforcement program changes. Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. At the May 25th meeting, the City Council approved staff's recommendations to transfer the code enforcement function to the Department of Building and Fire. And that was part of an overall proposal to coordinate the fire services with the City of Grover Beach Fire Department. Now staff is presenting recommendations to the council for implementation of a specific changes to the code enforcement program, along with modifications to the prior proposal in order to address some of the concerns and comments that the City Council expressed during the discussion at the last meeting. The recommendations include four primary components, which we believe will result in both a more effective program as well as meaningful cost savings. So first of all, in order to most effectively manage and administer the program, it is recommended that enforcement responsibilities for the regulations currently included in the code enforcement program be dispersed in the organization based upon the type of type of regulation. Therefore, for example, the Community Development Department is recommended to continue to enforce sign violations and response to ARC and Planning Commission actions. The Police Department is proposed to assume responsibility for all vehicle-related enforcement actions. That includes inoperable vehicles, vehicles parked on front lawns, oversized vehicles parked in residential areas. And then the Building and Fire Department is assumed to take over responsibility for enforcement of the remainder of the majority of other regulations. And primarily they consist of issues involving illegal structures and solid waste and those type of issues. We are proposing to provide a small amount of additional part-time funding for the Community Development Department, and they will share the enforcement responsibilities among their existing staff. The Police Department will handle the responsibilities with their existing patrol and traffic officers. Secondly, based on the discussion at the last meeting, staff has determined that it would be beneficial to maintain some level of dedicated code enforcement staff. However, we still do not believe that it warrants maintaining a full-time position, and therefore it's recommended to fund a part-time code enforcement position in the Building and Fire Department. We are still proposing that the engine companies perform the initial inspections and notices. However, follow-up and cases involving or requiring specialized attention would be coordinated by the part-time position. If interested, the existing code enforcement officer would assume the part-time position. If not interested, then we would need to recruit for a new employee. Third, in order to more effectively manage and resolve the code enforcement caseload, we are recommending that a citation process be established and implemented. The city currently has about approximately close to 60 active existing cases. Many of those over a period of about 3 years due to the fact of a lack of response by many property owners to many of the violations. Therefore, we believe that a citation process would help to resolve many of those problem cases in a more timely manner, and it would also help to reduce the need for more costly legal actions. The citations would only be issued after 3 written notices and when there's no evidence of progress or evidence of attempts by the property owner to try to address the issue. And the citations would only be issued by the director of building and fire or the police chief. And then lastly, we are recommending that a interdepartmental task force be established, which would include a representative from fire, from building, from community development, and from the police department. They would meet on a monthly basis in order to review problem cases and to assign organization-wide resources to most effectively address those problem cases. This recommendation actually implements an additional component of the community-based policing and the community-based government philosophy and approach. The recommendations are estimated to generate a savings to the general fund approximately $20,000 to $25,000 in fiscal year 2004-05 and $35,000 annually each year thereafter. I must tell you, these aren't easy recommendations to make. I want to, you know, really emphasize that they are not reflective in any way in the current code enforcement officers' performance, and they are in no way directed personally at him. However, they are simply a part of a very proactive, ongoing effort that we have put forth to try and manage the organization as efficiently as possible. So with that, we respectfully recommend approval of the recommendations by the City Council. And if approved, we would come back with specific action items for formal adoption. At this time, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions that you have. However, I've also asked the Director of Community Development, the Fire Chief, and the Police Chief to both be here for this item in case you have any questions for them or if you'd like them to comment on their ability to accommodate these responsibilities into their organizations based on the proposals we've just set forth.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or clarifications on the staff report? Councilmember Dickens?
Mr. Mayor. Steve, I appreciate the staff report this evening, and it certainly addresses some of the concerns that I brought up at our last meeting. So I appreciate what's been provided here. One of my concerns that still has not been fully addressed is I think that one of the benefits of having a full-time code enforcement officer now or somebody in that particular position is that the general public, the community, has a point person to address all these concerns. And as we parcel some of these responsibilities out to the appropriate departments, my fear is that we may be lacking in an identifiable person within the city infrastructure that is seen as, you know, the person that's kind of heading this up, and that's one area that I'd like to certainly see addressed. I certainly have all the confidence in the world of all of these departments, and I know that these departments are already involved in code enforcement. It's not as if it's a new job responsibility. It's just a little bit of restructuring an organizational approach to this. But I would like to see some sort of a formal way for the public to just know that if they have issues out there, who to go to. Obviously, this is something that shouldn't go to the city manager. It's not necessarily one of the department's department head's main responsibilities. So there needs to be an identifiable person that the community sees as taking on, you know, these actions. Secondly, I really like the idea of the task force meeting to, you know, review cases and disperse the responsibilities to the appropriate departments. And I think it's we're long overdue to have some sort of a citation authority to better manage and resolve the certain cases. I don't think this is a major issue that is blossoming or mushrooming in the city. I think for the most part we're doing a fantastic job. But there are some of those cases that do get out of hand. And when that happens, having the appropriate personnel and departments dealing with these cases so that they don't become problems for the city legally and thus forth, I think it's really important. So those are just some of my comments, and maybe if you could address my specific concern about a point person and how that might look within the recommendation that you're making.
And that's a very good comment, and one of the reasons we've come back and modified to some extent the recommendations. I would say we're proposing to deal with that in two ways. First of all, and if you look at the regulations that fall under code enforcement, to some extent there's not a lot of logic in many of it of why these different, very different types of things are in one program. And so in addition to dispersing some of these regulations to the departments that we think makes the most sense to deal with them, there would also be very much of a public public education effort to educate the public that they, you know, if it's a vehicle-related problem, they should be going to the police department or vice versa. So that's kind of step one, is we would do education, trying to get them to know what department to go to initially. But part two, to even more closely direct your concern, is the purpose of having at least a part-time position dedicated to code enforcement, that they would be the point person when somebody doesn't know, you know, the right department to go to. We would promote that call would go to them, and then they would have the ability to get it to the right department or to the right person and handle that. It is I think a very important function, especially with our goals in customer service, to make sure we don't, transfer people around unnecessarily. We want to get them to the right person right away. We just don't feel it requires justifies a full-time position to do that at this time.
Steve, do you actually see possibly this part-time person being one of the identified members of this new joint partnership with under the building and fire department with Grover Beach?
So Terry's going to have to take on assuming a program or setting up a program for code enforcement in Grover Beach. And what Terry and I have talked about it is while they probably in Grover Beach will not have a dedicated program, and I don't think we would be willing to have our position doing code enforcement for Grover. In my discussion with Terry, I don't think we have a problem having that person be a resource and setting these programs up. If that person can bring some training, I don't have a problem, you know, that person doing training for both cities, bringing in the staff from both cities and having that training. So I think it's certainly we're going to share them as a resource, not necessarily as somebody doing code enforcement, but as far as helping to make the program work in both cities, we're open to that. Do you want to add to that, Terry?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any other comments?
Quick comment, Mr. Mayor. I believe this program will work well because you're going to have the police department as well as the fire department that are out circulating with the community much more than that code enforcement officer has been that I've seen. And, of course, everybody knows my feeling about the code enforcement officer. So I'm very supportive of this move.
Okay, thank you.
One quick question, Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
This citation system, in the rare instances when it's necessary that we go to the citation, does this work the same way a traffic citation works? Does it have the full force of the courts behind it, or is it an administrative citation? If someone is going to ignore letters, are they going to ignore the citations too?
The chief can probably answer this the best. In fact, his department has training in place that will help implement the program.
Number one, citation authority already exists on quite a few of these. Number one, the municipal code has created the offense. Those areas which the police department actually has the ultimate responsibility right now, which includes all of the vehicle areas, with the one exception that we'll pick up is the one that you passed recently, which was the parking on front yards and that kind of thing. That's something we haven't done in the past, but right now, by state law, we have the citation authority, and we can issue a citation for any offense in the codes that is a violation. The fire chief, as the city's fire marshal and inspector, has citation authority currently in law. This new citation authority would involve the code enforcement officer, and we have the training to do that. It's called required by state law under 832 of the California Penal Code, and we can administer that training through our agency. We have the ability to do that, to bring that person up to a level where they can legally issue citations. But the citation authority for most of this is already in place, and it has been. The citation authority that's been in question for some time is the code enforcement officer, not the rest of us. We've always had that. And as far as the vehicle violations, as it is right now, if the code enforcement officer gets involved in one of these issues about vehicle abatements, it ultimately has to come to the police department as it is, because under the city's municipal code, the chief of police has the responsibility for vehicle abatements. So if the code enforcement officer gets to a position where it has to go further into a formal
program and direct staff to prepare the necessary action items.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Councilmember Reynolds?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. That will take us to item 11, new business. With the council's indulgence, I'd like to call a quick 5-minute recess, if I might. And then we will return promptly within 5 minutes.
He meant to do that.
Yeah, you really messed it up now.
It's centered now.
Okay. This takes us to item 11A, and one of the reasons why we called a brief recess, I needed to consult once again with the city attorney on this particular item. And even though the locus of my home is just beyond the 500-foot range, the traffic circulation issue on this particular item could have a direct and significant impact on the circulation in and around my home. For those reasons, I am going to step down on this particular item and allow Councilmember Costello to slide over and administer this item, and then I will be back afterwards.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. See, Rob, do we have Kelly here for the report, or is it going to be you?
I will handle this item. The proposal submitted by S&S Homes was to request a closure of Cortland Street between Raspberry and Ash Street for Jasmine Place construction. This property has recently been reclassified to multifamily and is the site for a 47-home development known as Jasmine Place, a planned unit development subdivision. The segment of Cortland that is requested for closure is the segment that is south of Raspberry down to Ash Street, this being the Soto Sports Complex, this being the city's Corporation Yard. The staff recommendation is going to be modified this evening by further discussion with the Lucia Marr School District, which did not respond to our written notice, but in follow-up today by my telephone calls, reveal that the access through Cortland be restored by August 15th. That would give them the initial 45-day period to complete construction, requiring total closure of that portion of Cortland for storm drainage, utility, and adjacent improvements, but would require that they open at least the sidewalks of Cortland Street to enable the student population to access the bus pickup point. The applicant is present and can explain to you in more detail the rationale behind their long request. The way the staff advisory committee understood it, it was primarily as a construction a staging area and storage area in addition to the necessary construction, street reconstruction for storm drainage and utilities. While we support the closure during the construction activity, we did not feel that the public should be inconvenienced for a full 8 months to enable a construction convenience. There certainly are alternatives, one of which was presented earlier and will be agendized in the future, which might include some use of portions of the city yard or Soto Sports Complex parking areas for storage, staging, or construction office. There is also a large park, relatively large private park proposed as a part of the Jasmine Place, and with proper construction management, that area could be used for construction staging as well. We have approved temporary use permits for model home construction. We understand that the map is progressing and will basically coincide with the request to close the street on June 30th, and then the question remains, how long will the closure be? The recommended closure would include a 3-month maximum closure for the vehicular purposes and a 45-day closure for pedestrian purposes. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to try and respond.
Thank you, Rob. Let's see if there are any questions.
Rob, I had a question. In your discussion with the school officials, was there any mention about the busing schedule for summer school?
None. So I did not discuss the specifics of summer school. I was only able to access two individuals in the school district. I asked specific questions. The busing individual was not available, but I was able to obtain the routing. There are two elementary school students who are bused to Grover Heights. There are a number of Paulding Middle School students who are bust from Soto Sports Complex. I do not know the magnitude of the summer program.
Part of my knowledge is, well, for the problem is right now we don't have a busing schedule for specifically for the high school summer school program, because it's we haven't determined where the students are coming. But that particular program will actually be held down in Apomo, so there will be a significant number of students. Would it be conducting grading operations? Typically, grading operations don't need closures of roads. Installing drainage improvements, well, it depends on whether those improvements are on-site or off-site. The on-site shouldn't need any road closures. Extending all utilities beyond Cortland Street to Raspberry, that, of course, would require a temporary road closure. I'm concerned that this is going to create a significant impact on this particular area if we actually do a 3-month closure. I would like to see specific road closures during the times that are totally necessary, and not utilize this particular area construction staging and so forth. So I guess my question to you would be, is this somewhat of an atypical request?
I would say yes. The staff advisory committee did discuss a shorter time period. 45 days was determined to be the recommended street closure. I think the applicant representative is present and can explain further the necessity of this closure. I'd point out that there is access to Berry Gardens from at least three locations, the segment of Cortland that extends from East Grand Avenue, Seabright from Oak Park, and Cedar Alignment from Spruce. So it isn't a total inconvenience that would require a single access or even dual access. It could be accessed from the east, west, and north. It would be the south access that would be closed. Part of the explanation of the grading operations is there will be earth movement, and much like happened with the construction of the Poplar Ponding Basin expansion, the discussion includes earth bridge and movement of material from one side to the other. There would be heavy equipment working on both sides of the street, trying to minimize the disruption of the street. There will probably be an earth bridge that would make vehicular access impossible during a short period of time during grading operations. Then there would be some disruption due to drainage installations and utility installations in both the street. There are some new connections, manholes being placed that would access Jasmine Place, which runs east-west and then turns north-south to a variety of local streets, and utility installations that would be reinforced. Again, I think the basic question of how long is absolutely essential could be asked of the applicant. And we did feel that a much shorter period than 8 months could be accomplished and felt that we were going to the extreme by suggesting a three-month maximum. We'd still like to have it the shortest possible period of time related to the necessity of public safety during construction. Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Thank you. Rob, don't they have the grades already set for the utilities and the sewer lines and the water lines that are in there?
The entire design will have to have been completed, and I believe is being reviewed right now by Public Works, so yes.
Because with the small amount of territory they're talking about and the amount of dirt that they have to move, it seems to me like that 45 days is an awful long time for what little
construction activities affecting Cortland.
Any other questions? Thank you. This is not a public item, but we will ask the applicant to come forward, or the applicant's representative, and then we will entertain any comments from the public also.
Good evening. My name is John Mack, representative for S&S Homes. I'm the one that brought the project before you in the beginning. And we had put this request together for a number of reasons. As the utility drawings were being developed with staff and all the connections that needed to be made, we made a first initial request for 3 months. I further amended that request to for an extension of time. The utilities that are going under Cortland are new storm drain. We have to get over to the Berry Gardens ponding basin. There's a couple manholes. There's a new drop inlet that's being placed in the corner side inlet. Both corners of both sides of Cortland have to be torn up and reconstructed. There's several utilities that are going underground. All the utility in terms of electrical, phone, cable are going all underneath Ash Street and are making that crossing. So our first initial request was not just for grading. It was also for the utilities that were going to be constructed and all the new structure of the street that had to be replaced. How long is that going to take? It's going to take about 3 months. And for the balancing of the site, nothing's at grade. The infrastructure isn't there ready for these 47 homes. It's not there yet. We have to put it in. When we amended our request, we amended that due to safety concerns. We started looking at it in the staging for the homes. We will be building all 47 homes at once. It's not going to be a phase situation where we can build one or two homes
and then three or four homes. We're going to have to come up and build it all together. And that's largely due to the affordable component and having to balance the budget. We are going to be staging all the homes and all the foundations and all the units coming up at once. What does that mean? It means there's going to be a lot of construction activity along Cortland Street. There's actually eight units, as you can see, that front Cortland Street. So there's going to be a number of subs and trucks and laborers going on the street. And I can tell you from experience, I live at 1501 Loganberry. I had my car, my brand new car, parked out down the street, and it was hit by a concrete truck. Do I want this to happen to my neighbors? No. I also have seven children. I don't know if I mentioned that, one of which does take the bus to Paulding at that bus stop. It's not going to be much of an inconvenience for her to go down to the right to get to the bus stop. She's going to be able to take the Poplar Street. I believe that's Spruce Street. So with that, we're concerned about the children's safety, the neighborhood as a park, but that is not going to be enough to store the materials, the trucks, the cars, the parking for the employees, and et cetera. As I indicated earlier tonight, we don't have a spot for construction trailer. So we're looking for your help into making this a safe place for the community as construction occurs for the next 14 months. Thank you. Any questions?
I'm sure there are some questions. Any questions?
Mr. Mack, and I concur wholeheartedly that the safety has to be a major concern, and doing this size of construction in this particular area is going to certainly require your full attention. A couple of the concerns that I'm having is within this area as you talk. I'm thinking not only of you know the students getting to the bus stops and so forth, but I'm also thinking of the fall sports. That becomes a very congested area when we have the Soto Complex filled with our fall sports folks and so forth. So I'm wondering in regards to what are the parameters in regards to weekend construction. Will we be doing construction basically Monday through Friday, or will there be a competition on Saturday for parking spots and so forth?
Actually, we will not be using any of the parking stalls in the park. We're planning to contain the site because we're worried about people parking on the site and coming in and we don't want people to get hurt, so our plan is to chain link, rope the site off, ensure safety from the public, as well as containment of our own employees.
As someone who lives in the area, you're fully aware, though, that right now that the north side of Ash Street is a parking lot, in a yes. sense, on a Saturday sports day, and that will no longer be accessible. Is that correct? There will be no parking there.
Correct. One thing that we have requested of staff and Public Works Department, and I don't know if Don's here, we asked if we can park along Ash Street, and be one of the first things that we wanted to do was actually regrade Ash Street and put down some base and widen it and be able to park on our side of Ash along the project to make parking available for the subs, as opposed to parking across the street.
Is it your intent then to actually have construction going on during the weekend time as well, Saturdays and Sundays?
Not necessarily. We have conditions of approval which state what times we can begin in the morning and what times we have to shut down. I believe the starting time for weekend activity, I believe, was 9 a.m. Maybe Rob can confirm that if he has the conditions of approval.
Unfortunately, that particular area is probably underparked with the amount of activity that goes on, and that's part of the problem that we have. I know during soccer season, I'm over there quite often, so to find an adequate parking spot sometimes is very, very difficult to do. So it's going to certainly be some competition.
Thank you.
Mr. Mack, I would assume that if you're going to build that many houses at one time, you're going to have a workforce of probably at least a minimum people there all the time?
Yes.
And if you're talking about parking along Ash Street, you're going to have that fenced. Well, then they're going to be parked there and migrate in through the open gate on Cortland, I would take it. And, it, you know, this parking deal is really going to be difficult if you close that off, and then everybody's going to have a lot of fun with the parking deal. And so, I don't know. I think that if we do allow for a closure of the street, it needs to be the shortest window possible. I would agree that we need to have a pedestrian walkway so the kids can get to the park and whatnot and go to the school bus. But to close that for an extended period of time for construction, I think that's got to be looked at very, very close. Those are my comments.
Thank you. Mr. Mack, quick question. How much of this period of time that you're asking for is going to be employed primarily as a staging area? And how much of it is for the grading and utilities?
Well, the first 2 to 3 months is primarily for the grading and installation and reconstructing Cortland. After that point, we want to use it for a staging area for the balance of the units, a place to stock the lumber, a place to stage the materials for the project. So roughly it takes about 6 months to build one of these units. So obviously 3 plus 6 is 9. We're thinking somewhere after the 5th month, we can reopen things up again. That's how we come up with our 8 months.
And there are no other options available for your storage area outside of blocking off Cortland?
Well, we've been trying and making requests with the city to see if we can use part of the corporation yard. At this point, we have a request in just for our trailer. We've asked for additional materials, if we can use that parking lot. I've noticed it's vacant most of the time. There's usually 3 or 4 cars in it. Even on soccer day, Little League day, my daughters both play softball, the parking comes up to the courtyard and stops. No one goes past that driveway to park in the courtyard. So I've asked for use of that yard to be able to stage materials, but I've got a no.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Mack? Thank you very much. We'll open this for any members of the public that would like to address the issue. I'd invite you to please come up and identify yourselves and go forward.
Gary Hoffman, a resident of Berry Gardens. S&S sold us very nice houses. Now they're asking us to spend 8 months inconvenience. I've canvassed the neighborhood. And most of my neighbors say no to 8 months. 45 days, fine. 30 is fine. But 8 months is ridiculous. And if they insist on 8 months, I ask the city to pass around a pamphlet or something so the neighborhood could vote on this, because it is going to be an inconvenience. S&S has also done something good. They've been watering it down, so we're not going to get the dust. They can close it for a short period of time. But 8 months we won't stand for.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hoffman.
Okay.
Appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to address this issue? Seeing no one, I'll close the portion and bring it back to the council and ask for any final comments.
Mr. Mayor, I would certainly agree that the 45 days should be ample time for the construction of the utilities and getting the grading done there, but I cannot agree with the fact that we should supply them with a staging area for their material.
Thank you.
I would concur. I think that we certainly have to look at the safety of the area and what's going on, and 45 days is, I think, adequate to do the public improvements that are necessary for this particular development proposal, but I concur with Mr. Hoffman. I mean, when I looked at the 8 months, I was a little confused, and I have a real problem with the 8, and even the 3 months, it seems a little extravagant. I guess what I would probably suggest is that we look at other alternatives in regards to, instead of using the public right-of-way as a staging area, some other possibilities. If that means the corporate yard or something that maybe might be a little bit more convenient, or some other private open space that would be appropriate. I don't know how that would work, but within, because there's not much. I know it's hard to move those materials around and so forth. Or relooking at the phased approach, and I know that's you guys have run the numbers and so forth, and that's what you're planning on putting these homes together all at once. But I think that this is, from my perspective, is a pretty atypical request, and I don't know that I would support, or I cannot support, using a public right-of-way for in this case, a private venture for that period of time. And so I would support a 45-day closure, and if there was a need to increase that, I would certainly entertain that coming back to either the Community Development Department and the proper procedures. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I have to agree with my colleagues. I think that we should keep the disruption here of the public right-of-way to the minimum possible. Community Development tells us that that should be about 45 days, so I can support that. I think that we do need to work with the applicant. The applicant's trying to put together a project which includes lower-cost housing, so it's incumbent upon us to try to work with them. However, I think that it is too much of an inconvenience to go to an eight-month period of time, and I would support also the 45-day period of time with the inclusion of comments to have city staff work to make sure this works and do all we can to keep that to the minimum. With that in mind, I'll invite
one other comments. Question, Mr. Mayor. When we're talking about 45 days, is this going to be 45 working days or 45 calendar days? Because if you take working days, that's going to stretch out to probably 60 days or a little bit more.
Raspberry and Ash shall be closed from June 30th until August 15th, 2004. With those recommendations, there would be a 45 calendar day period.
Thank you. Did you have a comment, Mr. Mack? I ask you to approach the microphone.
With the suggestion that was just made, that wasn't going to work for us because we have to notice 2 weeks in advance. So you're really only giving us about 30 days to get this entire thing done. So if we can go to August 24th. And then the other thing I haven't heard you guys discuss at all tonight is opening up to pedestrian traffic only and still keeping the street closed to automobile traffic, which still has three ways out of the project. Like I said earlier, we can't build a barricade for pedestrians to get through if that's the issue. So I don't know if I'm hearing you correctly on that.
Well, you've requested that with the 2 weeks' notice, who do we have to notice for the 2 weeks?
I'm going to be noticing everybody in Berry Gardens and also in the newspaper and noticing all the fire departments, hospitals, schools. The list is in your.
Okay, so that notice period would be 2 weeks prior to closure. How long is it going to take you to notice?
It's going to take at least a week to coordinate and then 2 weeks to notice.
Okay, so that's 21 days, which would be exactly it's 22 days to that. So if we.
You're into August, or you're into September now.
Right.
Yeah, and I believe the recommendation from staff was 3 months. And all of a sudden we went down to 45 days. So, Rob, can you help me out?
Again, I think you would have had a school district negative response if they had understood the initial referral, at least as it relates to pedestrians. School does restart major sessions in the fall and on August 23rd, and what I discussed with them was a recommendation that would not extend beyond August 15th for the pedestrian. The council and the SAC both, I think, have asked for the shortest possible period, and 3 months was the staff's most ambitious recommendation for allowing a closure clarified by additional information provided by Lucy Amar. I do think that there are other alternatives that management, Public Works, would consider. They have to be carefully coordinated with parks and facilities, but the temporary use of the city yard property or the Soda Sports Complex property, particularly during weekdays, but based on the scheduling, I think even that extending into the fall sports period could be a major conflict. So the concern here is that we don't set a precedent to allow construction staging on public streets unnecessarily. I think safety is an issue and that we need demonstrated construction scheduling, not necessarily the convenience of the contractors.
That we wouldn't, you know, that we wouldn't be, it sounds like we're binding you up if we say 45 days. Yeah. I feel like we're under a constraint of at least a deadline of August 21st, which is the Friday before school starts. So what, in other words, I can't support using that public right-of-way for a staging area. What would be an appropriate time to get the public improvements done that need to be done within that area? Can you give me a time? I mean, is it going to take 3 months to do? It seems like a long time to get the public improvements done without using it as a staging area.
Right. Actually, 3 months is the correct assessment for this work scope with the units on both sides of the streets and the connections and the spandrels that need to be done and their construction at Jasmine Lane. There, if I showed you the improvement plans, you'd be astonished. I mean, you just look at them and go, my gosh. And another thing to keep in mind is we don't have a permit yet. We were hopefully to have it last week. We don't have it this week. Now it's being pushed on maybe next week. So we really need that 3 months. And what we're saying is it's not just a staging area. We're concerned about public safety. If a child goes in there, a couple kids end up trying to cut through while trucks are backing out and moving around. We're pouring those foundations. We're doing work on both sides of the street. It's just not a street improvement, and we're done.
But hopefully you understand that this was something that we didn't do, at least for this longer period of time, when the Long's Drugstore on the other end of Cortland was constructed. I know there was a temporary road closure, and some very significant grading and improvements were done in that area. And again, the public safety had to be of major concern. This seems, from my perspective, to be a little bit, outside the realm of what kind of what we're doing or what we have done in the past. I would certainly, from a council standpoint, maybe look at the 3-month time frame and look at the total closure of up to August 21st, and then extend that out to the remainder of the 3 months, but to have pedestrian access possibly if that to make a total of 3 months, I think is what you're looking at. Is that correct? With a portion of that being having pedestrian access availability out through September 30th. That's kind of the way, if we were to modify the resolution, I think I could support that to help if the applicant is certainly willing to put up some sort of protective barriers for pedestrian access between, and I'm kind of looking at here, maybe August 21st to September 30th, and then that would be a total time of a total closure of 3 months.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you would see the language remain the way it is in point one, but adding a comma after September 30th, 2004, and adding language with pedestrian access from August 21st through September 30th.
So a total of 3 months total. That's
that would be at
a maximum. I believe that's the way the staff report reads.
Invite a motion.
Mr. Mack has indicated that they feel that they can restore pedestrian access by August 15th or August 21st, and they need more time for completion of the street work. So I think that we could still accept the vehicle closure for a maximum of 3 months. And again, I still encourage that the applicant seek off-site and on-site locations for minimizing the inconvenience to the public. We certainly want to maintain safety, but I think that the real issue is maybe shorter closures and partial openings could be accomplished. We have closed Cortland at least three times during construction of the Poplar Ponding Basin, the Longs Project, for utility crossings, for grading crossings, for installations, and they've been for short periods, several weeks for the major grading activity and several days for the utility installations. Same kind of thing could be done here if you manage your construction to enable use of the street during breaks in that period. I think the public would appreciate it, but the notice should be sent that the street could be closed at any time during that period of June 30th to September 30th, if that's the council's action.
Well, I think one of the things that we're going to get into is they're going to go so far with this thing, and then they're going to come in and say, well, we've had a hold up. We need to go another 10 days, another 20 days or something. And I've seen construction projects the way they work. I think that we need to set a drop-dead deadline and put it there and stay there and let them live with it.
I think the drop-dead deadline that the staff would recommend would be September 30th as far as the major street closure. Starting in October, we can expect rains, and we would like the street to be fully functional, the drainage to be fully functional. At that point, there should be construction management that would protect the public beyond that period. For the pedestrian, we would use the drop-dead date of August 21st.
Thank you.
All we need now is a motion, I guess.
That'll do it.
Jim, begging the council's indulgence, it may be better to leave the resolution as is and perhaps add a condition, have some proposed wording on a condition number 11 that deals with pedestrian access. So maybe I could just read it and see if it works. Condition number 11 would read, the applicant should restore pedestrian access to Cortland Street to the satisfaction of the Public Works Director prior to August 21st, 2004. If August 21st was the date that we all settled on. And then we'll leave the text of the resolution as is.
Okay. Well, then I would move that the City Council adopt a resolution of the City of Arroyo Grande approving temporary use permit 04-007, authorizing the closure of Cortland Street between Raspberry and Ash Streets for Jasmine Place, grading operations, storm drainage, and utilities installation, S&S Homes, with the Amendment 11 as stated.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Could we have a vote, please?
Meeting. Councilmember Dickens requested staff to agendize and prepare alternatives for cable casting Planning Commission meetings. Since then, as a result, staff has been working with representatives from AGP Video on alternative ways to increase programming within existing available revenues. And they've come up with two options. First, if we were to add planning commissions to the existing service contract, it would result in an approximate estimated cost of nearly $20,000 additional a year. We believe we can handle about half of that through available PEG access fee funds, but it would still require close to an additional $10,000 annually in new general fund revenues, which we would not recommend at this time. However, AGP Video is also proposing another option that they've been working on, a new proposal to convert the existing system into mounted cameras that would be operated remotely from a separate control room in order to reduce their staffing demands. By requiring less staff, it would reduce their costs. And therefore, we believe that under that system, we would be able to cablecast both Planning Commission and City Council meetings within the existing available PEG access fee revenues. In addition, we believe we are able to purchase the equipment necessary from PEG access fee revenues that we have accumulated over the last few years in that fund. The one issue I wanted to make you aware of is that staff notified the Planning Commission that this would be considered, and based on that, they indicated that they are opposed to televising their meetings at this time. So if the Council wants to proceed with televising Planning Commission meetings, staff would recommend that you first place it on the agenda for the joint meeting that we're trying to schedule with the Planning Commission for discussion before proceeding any further. With that, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions that you have, and also Steve Matthew from AGP Video is here to answer any potential technical questions you may have.
Any questions on the staff report?
Yeah, Steve, in regards to the purchase of the equipment for Alternative 2, what would be the time frame and the setup to do something like that? Is that something that's readily available, or have you had any discussions with our provider currently as to what the time frame might be?
Yeah, it's something it's kind of available. We're kind of blazing new trails here. I think all the cities in the county are probably going to be looking at this, but we're the lead on this. So Steve's doing a lot of research. He gives me new reports every day. So I probably need to ask Steve that. I'm estimating probably, a three-month period to get something, get a proposal and purchase the equipment and get them installed.
Steve Matthew, AGP Video. 3 months would be a minimum. A joystick in hand yet. I've already paid for a joystick, and they're promising me delivery on a daily basis. But I made a call today to Sony specific, and they assure me that the boat is landing in New Jersey, and it will be shipped, the first one to me in the country, within the next week. It's that kind of thing. We are running on the cutting edge. Everybody does want it. FISMO is also looking at the same plan currently, as well as Morro Bay. It's going to make it available. It's going to make it affordable for cities to actually produce more meetings at a lower cost. I'm an odd kind of businessman. I just want to make this thing work real well. It also sets you up for the future to be able to continue this program on any level that you want to, adding all of the Brown Act meetings at some point if you ever get there.
Okay, thank you. Sure. The issue before us is to determine whether or not the City Council has interest in proceeding with cable casting, and if so, you would like this to be on our joint session agenda, which is appropriate. Is that correct?
That's my recommendation, yes.
Okay. Maybe we can focus on that. What are some of the other?
I have no problem putting on the joint session deal, Mr. Mayor. Okay.
Councilmember Dickens.
Yeah, I have no problems either. I think that there may be some, as I read the staff reports from the Planning Commission, they had some ideas about how the monies could be used, and I think we need to address some of those issues, maybe that would be helpful in regards to letting them feel a little more comfortable with expending these types of dollars and getting this out there. So,
okay. Councilmember Costello?
I agree. I think that it's appropriate that we put this on the joint meeting and have a discussion with the Planning Commission and see where we go from there.
And I concur as well. So I think our recommendation is just that you need a motion on that.
Yeah, a motion would be helpful.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Mayor, I move that we instruct staff to put this item on the agenda for the joint City Council and Planning Commission meeting.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Reynolds?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. Takes us to item number 12, City Council Reports. I'll jump in real quick with SLOCOG. We did not have an opportunity to do our reports at the last meeting, so I actually have a couple of meetings to report. The one in, I believe it was May 5th, SLOCOG meeting, You probably read about in the newspapers and saw it on TV. It was the deliberation and determination of the agreement between the American Land Conservancy and Hearst Ranch, and SLOCOG approved the process to continue forward with the funding and that agreement for entering the phase process to get that done. That was the highlight of the May meeting, the June meeting. Some good news for a change. Some of our Prop 42 money and some of the other I think the last meeting we had highlight there was some administrative details and also election of officers for the coming year. And that's about it for me. South County San, Councilmember Dickens, I believe, hopefully will have a report. Mayor Pro Tem is not here this evening. That takes us to Councilmember Runnels.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We had a meeting of the Zone 3 Committee in May, and probably the best part about it was the recreation area is above what they were last year for revenue. The lake's 50% full, plus or minus a little bit, and we're delivering water as we're supposed to. Unfortunately, we've let out more water for the downstream release for the fish and the frogs than we were supposed to, but that's part of the habitat plan that we're forced to abide by until we get that settled. It's going to continue to be that way. So we had election of officers for the next upcoming year, and the train went by real fast, and I got reelected as chair. And that's that.
Good. Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I did attend the last two meetings of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, and it's just a brief report. The Sanitation District continues to run well within our discharge requirements. It's a great program down there that they're running. We will be looking at recouping some of our earthquake damage through FEMA and so forth, and the staff has been working at that process. We will be we're working on our budget, and we will be also looking at doing kind of an open house, most likely midsummer, and inviting everyone to come out to the San District, view the plant, see what's going on, and get a better understanding of what's out there. So that'll be kind of fun, and you'll all be invited to that. I'd also just like to mention that I was in attendance at the Arroyo Grande Watershed Forum last Thursday, which will be put on the city's cable channel for viewing. And I would just concur with Councilmember Reynolds that I think it's important that the public understand the complexities and what the issues are around the possibilities of cleaning out the creek channel. And kind of put things in perspective. It's a complicated process, and it shouldn't be that way, and it can be very frustrating, but I'm glad that we're able to put that on the city's channel. In regards to the South County Youth Coalition, I was not able to attend, so I have no report.
Thank you. Councilmember Costello?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I did attend the Air Pollution Control District meeting, their bimonthly meeting, last week. The main issue is the shrinking budget that they have to deal with. They have laid off one employee, and with other budget cutting measures in mind, think that they can continue to provide services to the district and still function over the next year. One of the contentious issues is the complete elimination of green waste burning in unincorporated areas, and that's set to go into effect I think June 30th, and there's still some disagreement by some of the members, by some of the residents in the area. And that's the only report I have. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. That takes us to item 13 now and then. Can we, do you need items now or what?
However you'd like to handle it. If you're comfortable with just individual members giving me suggestions and me putting them on, that's fine. Otherwise, I kind of brought it out tonight because I thought if you had them prepared, we can get consensus amongst the council that you all want those items on.
We have two significant items on this agenda, which I believe are going to take a fair amount of time. Are there any other front burner issues?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I would think that you should have an update for all of us on the availability of our water and our water situation. I think that would be helpful to the Planning Commission as well as us.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I might suggest that we do have the chair of the Planning Commission here that might have a suggestion. You may want to at least invite him to make a comment. There may be things going on at the Planning Commission level that we're unaware of that they may have questions of as well.
Well, Rob was also going to go back to the Planning Commission and ask and have do the same thing with them to see what items they'd like to suggest making.
Is that okay with you, Jim? If just to have just facilitate a discussion and see what the Planning Commission wants to put on the same agenda, be fine with us. Okay. Well, if we keep adding all these items, we won't stop before midnight. Okay. I'm comfortable with that if everyone else is. Okay, great. That takes us to item number 15.
I'd like to interject one thing real quickly. And
Council Communications, yes.
Might have been more appropriate 13, but we had a letter from the Ride on Transportation Coordinator inviting us to invite them to come make a presentation. I think I'd like to see that. I'd like to have them come tell us about the services they do provide to the community. I'd like to be more aware of it, and if we have a televised meeting, it may help the community to know more. So I'd like to see that included in one of our agendas. Thank you.
Yeah, we have been in contact with them. We'll do that.
Okay. Any other council communication? Two very quick announcements. I'd like to publicly acknowledge the efforts of one individual in our city, Bob Lund in particular, executive director of the VIA, for his hard work and effort in putting forth probably the most successful Strawberry Festival we've ever seen. So good job if you're watching, Bob. Much appreciated by the community and certainly by the council. And I'd also like to acknowledge Kirk Scott and all of the members of the South County Historical Society for a wonderful ceremony last weekend dedicating the new barn. We had a really good turnout, and it was nicely done. Staff communications?
Just very quickly, one, I wanted to announce that our City Hall offices will be closed on Friday due to the Day of Remembrance declared by President Bush for President Reagan. And actually, I think I gave you some information. It's pretty clearly specified within our personal regulations. Some other cities are struggling with whether to open or close. We have, fortunately, some very clear provisions in our regulations that enables to do that. And then secondly, also on that day, Friday evening at 6 o'clock, the village merchants are organizing a little memorial ceremony in honor of President Reagan. It'll be out in the gazebo here.
Any items, whether they're on the agenda or not? Seeing none, we will close the final public comment period, and this will be an opportunity this evening to adjourn our council meeting formally in memory of Private First Class Michelangelo Mora, and we will do that at this time. Council meeting is adjourned in Private First Class Mora's honor. Thank you, gentlemen.